And church is the only thing that you could play while you suck. And they will grow with you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast. My name is Matt Landry, and in this 57th episode, I'm here with Sean Sams.
Here you go. What's going on?
Throughout the podcast, we discuss musical directing, session drumming, rehearsals, touring, his origin story, the music industry, and much, much more. We also play the producer's game. Thanks for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast, a platform that allows us to learn more about the music industry through conversations with artists, people in the behind the scenes, music business individuals, creatives, and much more. This podcast is brought to you by Eights, a musical direction and playback company out of Toronto. And our goal with this podcast is to create a network and shine a light on all the stuff that is happening in the music world, topics and realities that are gatekept, and the people and roles that may often be overlooked. This week, I have the immense pleasure of welcoming Sean Sams to the podcast. He is a producer, musical director, drummer, husband, father, brother, and friend. He is the musical director and drummer of Preston Pablo, and I'm stoked to have him on today. We met Sean Sams through IG when he asked Eights to build a custom rack. a custom back panel for his onstage playback rig. We saw him perform with Preston recently at the Axis Club here in Toronto, and I thought it would be a great chat. So without further ado, please welcome Sean Sams to the podcast. Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good, man. Great to be here. You guys are a blessing in my life. I remember, I'll just start here.
Yeah, please.
I remember I was like, I need a playback rig. We did a we can dive further into it later, but we did an arena tour with just a little play audio and some quarters to XLRs and just walking around with that. Probably the worst experience of my life. And when I got back, the TM at the time was just like, Sean, we cannot do this again. I'm like, I totally agree. Yeah. And then I was just searching for you guys, and you guys have been like a blessing to my life. And man, like the playback rig that you guys built me is like flawless. I appreciate you guys, man.
Well, we'll appreciate the words, Sean, and always like appreciate the friendship as well that we built through this.
Absolutely.
Let's start the pod how we always start the pod. I'd love to ask you about your favorite experience as a fan for like live shows, like best show you've ever seen, best experience you've ever been at for live music.
My best show, bro. I mean, it may not be special to anybody, but when Beyonce came out here last year.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that show was like from the music was great. Beyonce was obviously amazing. But the whole thing is like the experience around the experience around the stadium. Like it was a whole thing. Like it wasn't just you walk in and you're just going to watch a show. It's like you could feel the aroma. You could feel like, oh, this is going to be special. So that was my favorite, like from start to finish. I've never been to a concert where I was just like into it the entire time and I stayed until the end. That was my first concert that I stayed until the end. So, man, it was actually the best experience. So much was learned. So many notes were taken. The hardest part, again, you will know this, hardest part as a musician is actually going to a concert and enjoying it for what it is.
Yes.
But I was able to enjoy it for what it is, but as well as take some notes and be like, oh, I can bring this to, yes, we don't have the budget like Beyonce, but I can bring the thought and the idea and the concepts to what I do. And yeah, yes. it was amazing.
I was on a business call today and we were talking about Beyonce in regards to just her show and how she sort of brings the musical experience and her ideas past like the musical realm in regards to like lighting, you know, creative vision, everything from set design, all that stuff. And for those who haven't seen the film, the concert film for the Renaissance tour, they say that they took 4 years to do the tour, just design the tour. So it's really nuts. What are some of the key takeaways, if you want to share, about some of the notes that you were taking? Like, was there a couple things that you remember from that show?
Yeah, for sure, man. I think the main thing, like the overall, I'll say the overall theme was the intentionality, like how intentional they were about every little detail of the show, like in regards to the music, plus dancers, plus video, plus intermission that didn't feel like an intermission, but it definitely was intermission. Like those little things, like you're just like, whoa, like this is really next level. And again, like you said, it took them 4 years to do this tour, right?
It's crazy.
4 years to do an hour and a half set. I think even knowing that in the back of my mind and watching it, those are the things I take away that, hey, like if you want something done right, I know in our generation, in our time, like we're like, we like to be microwaved. Like you just like, okay, you put it in for 2 minutes and it gets hot. But we don't like to cook. Like, we don't like to literally take the time and, like, cook it and chef like it that. Up and add, let things marinate. We're so quick to, like, just move on. Like, man, I want to do this. Let's do it. Yeah. And then we run into these problems of, you get the talks of, man, next time when I do it, I'm going to do this. Why do that? You could have just waited a year. You could have waited some time to get it done right. Go through the channel. Build your track rig. Build your show, get the right people on board. And then when you're ready to launch, there's no second guessing the launch. There's no, oh, I should have done this. So those are the things I took away, like everything that she does. And again, it's not about budget. I'm not talking about budget. We understand that if you have the budget, you could do whatever the heck you want. You could buy, like Beyonce made a truck for her show. Like, but it's not about that. It's more so about how intentional you are about what you're doing. Those are the main things I took away from our show.
Amazing. Great answer. Is there a project, campaign, era that would best represent your work for people listening, for people to go check out? You know, of course, we're not two Beyonces here talking. Maybe even a lot of people on the pod might not know Sean Sams. So what would you say is your project or campaign or era of your work that would best represent your career thus far?
Honestly, my career, just for those, again, I'm not a known guy or nothing like that. But for those that don't know, like my story is rather weird. Weird and weird. I'm not one of those, like I have two brothers that I grew up with that are super talented musicians. Like, I want to be like them when I grew up. One is older, one is younger. And they are like Rohan. Their name is Rohan and O'Shea. They were, especially my little brother, is like super talented. And some people were just born with it. For me, and I'm going to get to your answer, but I'm just trying to paint a quick picture.
Yeah.
For me, I grew up not caring about music. Like, I didn't like. Like, it's not like I didn't like music, but didn't. I wasn't the one be like playing drums on pans. There's like one picture of me playing drums on a pan, but I think I just took the sticks from my brother, and was just like trying to copy him. Right. But I wasn't passionate about playing music. I don't feel I was gifted when I was born with like, okay, with music. Right. So I didn't get my start. I'm 32 now. I didn't get my start, 32 in March this year. I didn't get my start until I was 16. So if you calculate the music years, it's not like a long, it's not like 20 plus years of music. It's right. So when I grew up, it was more so like there was a need at the church. And I stepped in. I'm a gospel guy. That's my background. That's my upbringing. And I started playing at church. And then from there, there's a passion that grew in me about like music production, the way it sounds. And then this led to throughout the years, building relationships, friends. And then I started this with my partner, Kurt Grange. I started this company called Dream Universe Music. And basically what we were doing is we're just producing gospel records left, right, and center, like for artists that just in the city, outside of the city, that people that just wanted a chance and that wanted to take a chance on us. And from then we were able to put out records. One of my best records, I believe, one of our best records that we're super proud of is from this artist named Matthew McIntosh and Life. We did a couple songs for them called like Christ Did It All and Redeemed. Mm. Those are two songs that were just like, yeah, I'm proud enough to say that, yeah, this is amazing. And as well, we did some work with this artist named Kiara, Patrice. But yeah, those are the things cultivated who I am. Even that, those things gave me the head start of becoming a musical director, becoming a producer. Those artists took a chance on us. And from there, it was just like, okay, it was game. So I believe those words. And then now the Preston stuff is a good, something that I can proudly say, yeah, this is something that I'm a part of. Mm. Yes, I'm the musical director, but I mainly think about it as like I'm a part of it, rather yeah. than that I'm the face of it. It's a team. It's not just me. There's so many guys that helped, so many guys and girls that helped put this thing together. I just have the honor of working with those type of people.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to think about it too. Mm-hmm. It's a team. It's a team activity. It's a team effort, rather. No, that's fantastic. You know, I wasn't planning on going there right away, but I wanted to talk about no. I'm not to what you were saying. What I'm about to say in regards to just church. I'm not a church guy. I didn't grow up in church, but I respect the church come up for musicians. It's insane. I mean.
It's amazing.
It's funny to say that. It's not funny. I'm just jealous of the gospel background that these people have in the music industry sometimes.
you know what it is, Matt? I think church, the main thing about growing in something is you need reps.
I completely agree.
You need reps, and church is the only thing that you could play while you suck, and they will grow with you. No, but it's the truth because a lot of the times is that you're just filling a void. The old drummer or keyboard player, guitar player, bass player, they left, and there's nobody there. Oh, you're the next guy. You kind of like playing. All right, go.
Right.
And then people, and they'll allow you to play and grow. I remember, like, I couldn't keep time for the life of me. I couldn't do it. I was just like playing, like, because there was no playing the click tracks, there was no playing the metronomes.
Yeah.
In those time, you had to learn how to keep time and keep the thing moving, keep the bus moving, and keep the groove steady.
Yeah.
At the age that I was at now, at that time. So there wasn't, but church allowed me to like really hone in that skills without, like, yes, there's times where you're like, yeah, we're gonna get another drummer to come in on this special service, which is fine.
Yeah.
But a lot of it, the went, because again, church is Sunday night. How my church was, Sunday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, Friday. Sometimes it's Saturday, and you come back again Sunday. So you're literally playing drums for probably, and our worship services run probably like 2-3 hours. So if you think about how many times you're putting in a week, it's almost like a worth a day amount of time of you playing drums. You're going to get better.
Yes.
Even if you don't want to, you're going to get better because of you're putting in the reps. Like,
yeah.
So church, I think that's one of the differences between church musicians and everybody, is the difference is that we were able to fail and grow.
Yes.
Fail
fast.
And grow.
So it was like a fail fast vibe.
Exactly. Yeah. Fail fast, grow.
Yeah.
And in other worlds that you don't have the opportunity to play as much.
Yeah.
Now it's up to you to practice. To be honest, practicing is great, but being in church, you didn't really need to have your own practice time because you're going to be playing every week regardless.
Sure.
That was the blessing of growing up in church.
Oh man. No, it's great to hear. I've spoken to many people about it, but nobody's been saying it like you, and it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Okay, let's move on to the quote. Last year, for those who are keeping up to date with the pod, last year was the Erykah Badu quote. Big fan of Erykah Badu, basically my entire life. her quote was, you know, it was comparing the music business to the music as in the art form. This year we're doing the Joni Mitchell quote, which is, I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. This is from an interview with Robert Hilburn of the LA Times in 2004. So this is 20 years ago. This is pre-social, pre-social media. And just for the people that are listening in, she doesn't agree with this. But she, basically, she says she heard somebody from the music industry saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. She doesn't agree with it. What do you think, Sean?
that's tough. Perfect example, look at TikTok.
Yes.
You're seeing, I'm seeing TikTok artists go on tour with one song that they created, and they're doing world tours.
It's crazy.
So talent does play a key role in it, but I think nowadays I think it's more so about reach and personality. What connects you to people? One of the main things I always tell artists I work with is, I'm like, yes, you could be a great singer, but if you don't connect to your audience, what's the point? Because nowadays it's just like, what is good is subjective. Like, you like what you like, I like what I like. So it's not like we could say, we know what bad singing is, we know what bad playing is. We understand that, but I'm talking about the next level. It's less about, again, like I'll use myself as an example. I really don't believe that I'm like one of the top fives out here.
Sure.
But what I do have is I know how to deal with people. My pastor will call it, he said, peopleology. Like, I know how to talk to people. I know how to, again, cooperate with people. And that's what will get you further in life.
Yes.
So the talent is good to have, but what gets you further in life is, do people like you? Just like with touring, like if you're going on a tour, think about how many hours you're playing compared to how many hours you're driving or on a bus or in a hotel.
Yo, yes. I always say, and people have been listening to this pod for over a year now, it's all about the hang. It's all about, because, and like you're saying, you're literally, it's like you're spending 23 hours of a 24-hour day off stage, and that the only hour, that 1 hour is the only time that you're off stage, you're on stage. So it's like the hang is way more important.
Yep.
You know, you got to play, you know, but I'd rather have somebody that's 80% good as the person that's 100% good, if that 80% person is more of a hang and that we can tolerate ourselves.
I believe at the level that we're talking, most people are good.
Yes.
Realistically, that we're at, and I'm not, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to make myself feel big or anything like that, but the level that we're at, most people in our circle are good musicians, good singers that are right now either touring or about to be doing it or have been doing it in the past. So the playing part is small. Like, it's not that serious.
And what sets you apart now is the thing off stage. I completely agree. agree.
Are you on time?
Yes.
Count on you. And these are things I used to be horrible at, that stuff. Like, being on time, knowing the material, showing up with the right attitude and the right looking the part, talking the part. Like, these are all things I was horrible at. And I had to really self-analyze. You know, what separates musicians, and you'll see, is art. You'll know who's self-aware versus who's not. And that's the difference. Like, if you're self-aware, you'll know when, okay, well, I gotta take a step back. Or like when the musician that's so giddy and super excited that they don't know when to, like, no, you gotta step back, give the artist room to
breathe.
Like, you know what I mean? You're becoming the focus. Now you need to step back and know where you are.
Yeah.
So these are all things that I had to learn, and I had to learn real quick. Like,
yeah.
But I had to be self-aware of like, no, I'm doing horribly at these things. But yeah, man, like it, like you said, we're only on a, like we spend more time in rehearsal than we spend more time in rehearsal playing than we actually spend on the gig.
Oh man.
Like hours and hours,
yeah, hours.
Four, five, 6 hours of rehearsal to do a 1 hour show.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's like, how do you hang? Do you hang well?
And
that's the main thing.
Yeah. Back to the business part of it. How is the business part of your sort of day to day viewed on your end of things? Just the business part of it.
The business in regards to
just how what you think about like the business part of your day to day. Of course, you know, we love music. We're both drummers. It's all great. But when it comes, let me rephrase that then.
Yeah.
When I say music business, what do you think about? What comes up?
Music business, that's a wide conversation.
Yeah.
But on a day-to-day type deal, it's mainly about making sure I'm organized in everything that I'm doing. Organized meaning I'm not really caught off guard if something was to go wrong in my mind. So, and if something was to go wrong, I'm prepared. So in regards to, if we're talking about business, meaning getting paid on time, in regards to me being a musical director, I have to coordinate with them. I'm the one, I'm the liaison between the musicians and the artists.
Yep.
Right. So some people have to wear two hats, like as a band leader and a musical director, right? There's a musical, I believe the musical director, they handle the business. So what's the payment structure? Are people, because not everybody gets paid the same. That's not how it works
true,
anymore.
Yeah.
Some people get paid differently. They have different arrangements. Some people are doing a little bit more versus the playing part. So on the business side of it, it's a lot of organizational, making sure things are in order, making sure that I'm planning ahead for what I don't know that will come. Kind
yes.
of thing. That sounds so weird, but it's kind of the reality of it. Like, I just don't know what it is, but because I have these things in order, I'm ready if something was to happen today or tomorrow or right now.
Yeah. Are you seeing any new developments in the music business that you're interested in?
Honestly, sync licensing is something that I'm taking. I'm keeping a close eye on sync
okay.
stuff.
Yeah.
Trying to get into that realm of being able to get your music, get what we do, get what you do out in that side, because again, like the jingles, the little things, because again, if you think about all the music that you've created in your life just as a producer, just like, oh, I'm just gonna do this thing a little bit, like, yeah, there's a lot of things that we sit on. So I heard somebody say the richest place in the world is the grave, right? Because there's so many people with super ideas, super concepts that they just weren't able to get out because of either lack of knowledge, either just like, they just don't know, just the safe ignorance, right?
Right.
So sync licensing in that world, understanding again, the relationship between the management, what that looks like, because I feel like nowadays it's taken a little turn in regards to like tour managing, artist managing, understanding like who's who, day-to-day managing.
Yeah.
Some people wear all hats, and understanding where you can fit in without being a sore thumb or being like a little too much in there. So those are the major things, like management and singleizing are the things I'm looking at like, that's pretty... Like,
yeah.
Those are pretty interesting to me.
And just like knowing like the roles and stuff. Because I feel
exactly.
like in 2024, especially with social media, with all these things, it's easy to get caught up in just like the few people that you email with. But there's probably a whole other team that's doing a whole bunch of other stuff. So no, exactly. I completely agree. Like knowing all the roles and what they do in like and how they interact with your role.
Exactly. Anyway,
wanted to get into the origin story here. We talked a little bit about it. Can you give me a lowdown on where you grew up and what your creative upbringing is? We talked about your brothers a little bit. We talked about church, of course.
Of course.
We mentioned off air before we press record that you're currently in Pickering.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, please give me the lowdown on where you grew up and your creative upbringing.
I was born in Scarborough. Scarborough got really bad. My parents, thankfully, in 2000, I believe, my parents moved to Brampton, and I was in Brampton from a very long time until when I moved out of Brampton to go back to Scarborough. Then I got married, went to Whitby, and then back to Brampton, and now I'm in Pickering. So I've been around, but honestly. Yeah. My story is in regards to the origin of my musical taste, my ability. Yeah. It really started, like I said before, it started at the age of around 16, 15, 16 is when there needed to be a sub in the church. And I was able to play my oldest brother. He's now a pastor, but back then he used to, he was like a bass player, drummer, keyboard player. He was doing it all.
Nice.
But one of the drummers left. And then that developed me coming in. Again, me and my brother obviously have a relationship. So
yeah.
It was easy to connect with that. From there, by that time, as time was going, YouTube was my best friend.
Yes.
There's a church called Cooper Temple that I was like, me and my brothers and my cousin, like we were killing that, like watching that every day. And then the drummer that I was mostly looking up to at that time was Nick Smith. He's from LA. I just loved his style, his charisma, his movement, his passion. There wasn't a lot of people that sounded like him.
Okay.
And then from there, it happened to be, I started developing my own sound. Like I'll tell people like, no matter what, I'm a church drummer and like, that's who I am.
Yeah.
if you're going to call me for a gig, you know you're going to get that in some sort of way. And sure. You got to be okay with that. And then from there, I just developed my own style and my own swag, we will say. Mm-hmm. And just learning what I do best. Like, I'm more so like doing tricks and stuff like that, chops and all. I love watching it. But do I do it often? Well, I try not to, but I feel like my style is really like from my upbringing in Brampton,
yeah.
Going to school because I was an athlete, but then on the side I was playing drums a little bit. But
yeah.
Then when I realized that my football career is over, I went head first into music, and then from there that's when I learned okay, well, I can hold it down. It was more so that I can hold it down and people are like, oh, calling you and doing little things. A big shout out to Anthony Lewis with the DNA Project. They're like, they do like corporate weddings and whatever. They okay. actually, when I was 17, gave me like my first like club bar gig.
Right.
And that was really like the first time getting in tune with covers.
Right.
Like learning songs. Sure.
Intentionally.
Intentionally.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
Yeah.
Like the Sade's and the Lauryn Hill's and like learning these grooves right the right way. And I probably didn't learn them the right way until I was like 25. Right. So like you know what I mean? And being able to put away like, yes, my aggressiveness from the church, but being able to take that and like you gotta shape it. You can't just, it's not like one shoe fits or one, like, you know what I mean? You have to be able to take a little bit of what you know and bring it. But like really the DNA Project, Anthony Lewis, that just came to my memory. Those are the guys that gave me a chance to like start playing these gigs on Friday nights. I'm 17. I'm not even allowed to be in these clubs. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not allowed to be there. Like, and I've been playing, and that's what really got me going out there and playing at different clubs, different places, playing for audience that don't care to see you. Like, you know what I mean? And being able to bring them a show by the end of the night. At the beginning of the night, they're like, "Who the hell are you?" By the end of the night, it was, "Man, it was great meeting you."
Whoa, that's great.
Yeah, so that was it.
Which is the opposite almost in church, right? Because everybody in church knows you.
Exactly.
And they're
It's easy
there.
in church. Your
Exactly.
mom is sitting across from you, your dad. So if you mess up, you still have the backing of your parents. Out there, they don't care that you're 17.
Yeah, shout out to the first gig like people kind of thing.
Yeah, man.
The
Oh my
people
God.
that gave us the first gigs.
The
No,
first the
for
chat.
real.
Even when we didn't deserve it. That's the thing.
Yes,
Like,
sure.
I was ready for it, but
What was the kind of music that was around the house? I want to know about that. What was the
I
kind of
mean,
music like listening to, that y'all were listening to around the house?
heavy gospel. John P. Key, Fred Hammond, Kirk Franklin,
Well, yeah, wow.
Shirley Caesar, like heavy Hezekiah Walker, heavy gospel music. And then, like, because my parents didn't really do, like, my parents are, we call them, they're Christian, they're saved Christian pastors. So they didn't really do the secular stuff. You weren't hearing, like, I know some people like, "Yeah, my parents used to play Al Green in the house and all that stuff." We weren't doing that. Like, we were just, it was straight up gospel.
Just
Everything was
gospel, yeah,
gospel.
straight gospel.
And for me, it was just like, that was this type of things. Synth, heavy drum-centric music. Bass rhythm sections is what's carrying the songs. Those are the type of music that we are bringing, that were in our upbringing.
Well, you were saying you so you slipped it in there quickly, but your parents, both of them are pastors?
No, my dad was an assistant pastor. My mom was a missionary. That's kind of what the vibe was.
Sorry, I understood that both of your parents are pastors, and now your
Oh,
brother's now a pastor. Okay. That's but
my
that's
whole
no, but
family's
that's
like,
good.
it's just in church leadership, period. Like, that's just what it was. Leaders in
Fantastic.
church.
And other than that gig, that first cover gig at 17 years old, when did things like change like professionally for you? Like is there one moment that you remember that was like, okay, now it's like now I'm doing it, like this is my career now.
I think when I was around 20, I believe that was when it was like, that feels so long ago though. But when I was around 20, that was like there wasn't a moment. It was just a series of events that were happening where now you were the first call. "Oh, John, we need you there." And then it's just like, "Okay, Sean, do you have a drum set we need?" And I'm like, "Oh shoot, I have to buy drum sets. I gotta buy drum skins." Long McQuaid was like my second home. Like, it was just, and then once I realized, and my parents started seeing, "Oh, this guy actually cares about this," then I saw my parents investing in what I was doing as well. And it was just like, "Okay, I'm doing this. I'm getting the gigs consistently." It wasn't like, "Oh, I'm getting here today and tomorrow. I don't gig for the next month." I was like, consistent gigs. And then from there, it's just like, okay, well, you gotta up your gear. Like, you can't be playing these drums that are falling apart. You can't be playing with these broken cymbals. The look means something too. So I was around the age of 20 is when things were starting to come together. And I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm start taking this serious." So it's been 12 years. 12 years since then.
Yeah, crazy. And then just to fast forward here now, with Preston,
Yes, sir.
how did that start?
Shout out to my guy TJ Whitelaw. I don't know if you guys know who
Oh
that
yeah,
is, but
of course,
he's to me one of the best guitar players, one of the best guitar players that I know, one of my favorite, one my top three. During I think it was a little bit after the pandemic. Pandemic. I don't know when that ended or started. Well, I know when it started, I don't know when it ended. But
Yeah.
during the pandemic, he hit me up one day. It was just so random. He's like, hit me up. I can't remember his text or phone call or something. Like, hey man, like let's hang. There's this young kid that needs a drummer from one of my friends. I was just like, okay, sure. I'm like, you're TJ, man. You're good people. And
Yeah.
TJ is one of the greatest personalities. He's just amazing, amazing guy.
Yeah.
And I credit a lot of where I'm at now to him. He put me on some good stuff that carry weight, carry a little bit of weight that was able to also to I could add it to my resume.
Yeah.
So I just have to take a moment and just celebrate TJ. But
Yes, of
like
course.
basically, from there, TJ had a gig, had to leave to go. So it was just me and TJ. Let me take my step back.
Yeah.
And then we were just doing a couple shows with Preston, nothing serious. And then we brought in a bass player. TJ got a call to go on a tour that
Yeah.
he's currently on right now. It was a bittersweet moment, because TJ was the MD.
Yeah.
But then he had to go, so he's like, yo, Sean, you're the next. Yo, you know this, you care about this, you're like, we trust you. And it wasn't like a thing where it's like, you're the MD now. Like, it wasn't that. So let me just like clear that with everyone, because it doesn't all often happen like that if you're not usually the guy.
Right.
How it happened was, from there, I was just like, okay, TJ's focused on his tour. We got to keep the bus moving, right? And
Yes.
TJ's doing his best to get things together. He did an amazing job setting us up right. But then at the same time, we had to do our part. So I just felt like, okay, all right, we gotta get this done. We gotta get that done. So I started doing more. And it wasn't like, oh, I wanna be the MD. It was more so, I just want this to be good. Like,
It needs to happen.
I don't care who's the MD.
Sure.
Like, that stuff doesn't mean anything to me. I just want to be able to go on stage and play good music in
Yeah.
front of the crowds that we've been playing. We've been playing in front of some crazy crowds within the last year. And I
Yeah.
just want it to be good. And then from there, management was just like, yo, shout out to Matt and Cole. They're like, yo, we see what you're doing. And yo, we want you to be the guy. And I was just like, okay, cool. But I would
Yeah.
say, like, with people, you have to understand, like, you have to do things because you love to do it first before you do anything, before you think about anything else.
Yeah,
A lot
and
of
before you get the accolades too.
exactly. A lot of us grew up like, some of us want the gig so bad to be the musical director so you could say I'm musical director. And at that point, it's just like, what's the heart behind what you're doing?
Yeah.
Like, is it gonna last? Because you have that heart, that stuff's not gonna last. You know what I
Yes.
mean? So that's how the Preston thing came about. And I worked at some great David is another
Steinmetz.
drummer. Steinmetz is another
Yeah.
drummer. He came on board and he helped us arrange some stuff. And a couple guys from the States, a couple guys, my brother Kurt Grains as well, he came in. So yeah, so for me, it's like, I just look at it as, yo, part of the team. You know what I
Yes.
mean? I like, and that's just what it is. And
Yep.
I'm able to work with some fantastic people, but that's how that one started.
Amazing. What are the fondest memories so far of that camp? Of touring, one-off gigs, fly-out gigs, even just rehearsals. Like, what are some of the fondest memories for you?
One of the greatest memories was we played Canada Day in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And that was like, it felt like 10,000 people. It wasn't the people. It wasn't just like the people. I think it was just the moment. Like, it's not like there was like 100 people on stage. It was just the four of us, myself, TJ, Preston, and Jamal. So the people that were there from day one to see us doing Drake Underground, to doing like to be a part of that journey,
Yeah.
like a kid from Timmins, Ontario, like that just loves to be around music and he's a great songwriter, super humble heart. from him to do Drake Underground than we're doing Canada Day. There's so many things because we've already done an arena tour. Those moments were cool too, but like actually doing a hometown, I call it hometown because it's Canada.
Right.
It's a home show in Canada in front of that type of audience, CBC, and we were the only team with an actual, like with a band outside of the house band.
Right.
So it was actually pretty,
like a proud
pretty
moment.
Cool. It's a proud moment for us and Preston as well.
Yeah, amazing. For those listening, I'm from Sudbury, Ontario.
Sudbury.
And Timmins is 4 hours north of that. And I have some family in Timmins and near Timmins and all that stuff. For Preston to be now where he's at from Timmins, you know, love that for the Northern Ontario.
Yeah, there you go.
Pride. There you go.
Love it.
any challenging moments, Sean?
Oh my gosh, where do I begin? Oh my Lord. Oshiega. Oshiega. I first year doing Oshiega. Trax rig.
Just didn't work.
Didn't work. It just went halfway through, not halfway, like three quarters into the set, Trax rig just said,
"Oh."
Nope.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there. It's like, actually, it was super hot.
Yes, it's the heat.
So many, oh, man. So many things are happening.
Yeah.
That was a part of the transition from TJ to myself.
Right.
In regards to who's like kind of running the show.
Yeah.
And that was like my first show being at the head of it.
Right.
And that happened. So I was just like,
yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God. It wasn't my fault or anything.
Right.
But being the head of it and that the first thing that happens.
Right.
I was just like, it happens. But
one of those head in the hands moments.
Yeah, man, my heart sank. TJ and Preston did a great job of like continuing. We were able to get it back up and running, but by that time we were going over and it was just a hot mess.
Yes.
But that was one of the worst times that I've had, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was before you guys made us what we have now. So
it's great. But the heat thing is always an issue, especially with the play audios.
Festivals, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. Like so but yeah, that was the worst moment.
Yeah.
You need to have one of those. Okay, no, I don't want anybody to have that moment. But there's some moments that you guys need to have that will like keep you humble as well.
Mm.
Like as much as prepared as you think you are, and you know, I got this in the bag. That moment really brought me back to like, okay, this could happen to anybody, great or small. You need to stay humble so that you don't get humbled.
Yes,
and that was me being humbled moment.
Right. Yeah. For you, Sean, I'm just going to pivot to another thing here.
Yeah, let's do it.
What is musical direction for you? Just starting there. I know we talked about it a little bit, you know, being a team player, being all that stuff. But at the core of it for you, what is musical direction?
Being the artist's musical brain to me, like on the music side.
Yeah.
Musical directing is just like you are the artist's brain in regards to the musical direction of the show.
Mm.
Taking whatever ideas that they have, concepts that they have, and making it relevant to a show that they can sing and be comfortable in. And then with that being said, you're managing the band.
Yes. Yeah,
you're a musical director is a manager.
because
it's less about the playing, it's about literally managing personalities.
Yeah,
managing again, being the liaison between the artists. You get the heat first.
Yes,
anybody else is bad. It starts with you.
Yeah,
right. So being able to manage those things, ideas, concepts, players, all of that.
How has that role influenced just your drumming and just your musicianship and just like all of it?
Because now you can't think, I'm just going to play drums. Like, you're thinking about every part of the band in sequence of how it is, thinking about every part of the show, making sure that it is a show, making sure that there's moments in the show. Yes, your job is to keep the backbeat, make sure you're playing the parts, but it's in, as a musical director now, wearing that hat, I'm thinking about, okay, what's the bass player doing? Is the bass player okay? What's the keyboard doing? Is he okay? Guitar, are you okay? Is Preston okay? Is the artist okay?
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the main thing, that you make sure that they're covered on all ground. So you can't, like, it's not, it's like you have to see the entire vision before the artist does.
Yeah. How do you make sure that the artist is okay?
I think it's one relationship.
Yeah.
You got to know, be able to read the artist without them having to say a word.
Yeah.
You got to know their body language. You got to know even their huffing, their huffs and the,
yes,
and their puff. Like, these are little things that you got to be studying them as a person, get to know them as a person. And then how you make sure that you're okay, because you know what they like. Mm. So there's certain things that you will even present to them, certain ideas, certain thoughts, certain concepts. People be like, "Yo, Sean, I think we should do this." Nah, bro, I don't want to. I'm not shaming you or anything, but I know what he wants, so we're just not going to do that. Some people will take it personal. Some people just understand what the game is. It's just like, I'm not going to bring this to him because I know, or them or her, because I know they're not going to want it. Period. Yeah. And it's going to become a distraction. The main thing, you only want the artist to worry about singing.
Mm.
And your job is to make sure that you're like the little soldier around them, just fighting off every little distraction. Oh, what about who's gonna do this? Don't worry about it. Who's gonna do that? Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Under control. Just make sure you know that whatever, all you got to do is go up there and sing.
Mm.
And that's how you make sure that they're okay. And then if something was to go wrong on stage, just by them turning around and looking at you, you're able to figure out, oh, okay, that's what that means. But that's relationship right. And you understanding, like,
yeah,
music and cues and people and body language. But it is work, but it becomes natural eventually.
How do different artists and camps and management camps, in your experience, how do they treat the musical direction role? And what are some of the differences there that you see between camps? Not maybe not even for you, but maybe some of your friends have talked about that. You're comparing your experience as an MD compared to, like, a friend's experience. Where are some of the, like, discrepancies in, like, some of the?
I think a lot of it is if there's no trust, then there's no foundation to anything. I think, like, in my case with Preston, there has been, again, because his first show, I was the drummer for that show.
Yeah.
Right? His last show to the state, I'm the musical director. So between that year or two, I don't even know how long it was, but that year or 2 years, and there's been so many things that built trust.
Mm-hmm.
Or I look at trust like a blank paper. Once it's crushed, you can never really fully iron it out. So this paper has been clean, never crushed because of the years that you're putting in. I realized how management treat, I think in now there's a lot more seriousness to musical directors. Before it was just like, yeah, anybody can do it. I think now, because again, budget, now people are being like, well, I can only do a drummer. You know, Matt, I can only do a drummer and a guitar player. Or a drummer and a keys player, and then drummer, you run the tracks.
Yes, yes. The no bass, so now, no bass, no keys vibes.
No bass, no keys. So the musical director now is very important, because now you're the one that's doing tracks. You're the one that, your job is literally insane. Like, you're doing the most. So there's a great need for musical directors and musical direction. So you're seeing that, I'm seeing the importance of that. Before, when I was like getting into it, it was more so the musical director was just, okay, yeah, just play this note or call these shots. Now it's a whole, if your musical director, you need to know Ableton. Like, yes, you need to, there are certain things that you have to know. Like, you need to be able to build a show from scratch. And different experience, like, even look at some of the guys in the States, it's, a lot of people think that the musical director arranges everything. No, that's not how it works anymore. Yeah. And you don't have the time, unless this is your only gig and whatever, and you want to do it, but like, you don't have the time. Musical directing is, what I'm seeing the change now is the management learning that the musical director is not the only one that creates the arrangements.
Yeah.
Some of them think it's all you. It's like, no, I don't have the time to do that. So I need to call some of my friends, call some people that I know that do this. Kind of in our case, David, we called David. We called my brother, Kurt Grange. We called this guy named Niall. My brother, Emery from Texas. Like, there's a bunch. So that one show was five different arrangers.
Yeah.
But as a musical director, you're managing the whole thing. So now people are understanding, oh, so you are a manager. So now we have to make sure you're privy to earlier, to conversations earlier.
Yes.
So before we should be the last one to hear that, yeah, this is going to happen. You're just like, that. You know how that affects us? So now you're in the initial, now you have a seat at the table.
Yes.
And that's the difference that I've noticed with myself personally, is that like, conversations are a lot earlier, like even before the band knows things, even before even the artist knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, you guys will see there's a tour that's supposed to start that I'm not on, but I knew, okay, I had to do this. Sean, what do you think about doing this? Do you think this is doable? No, it's not, Matt, or no, it's not cool, or maybe you should do this. Like, you know what I mean? And nobody knows what's going on. So these are kind of the vibes and of like how it's changed throughout the years.
Mm.
For me personally, like before I'd just be like, yeah, the last person to know, and then I have to deal with the consequences. I'm like, this is not even doable, but you just have to make sure it's doable. Right. But yeah, that's how I see how it changes throughout the year.
Any tips for those who want to get into musical directing? Maybe, you know, maybe there's some musicians that are listening to the podcast and they want to know what it's about. Now they know a little bit more what it's about. Any tips for those people that want to make the move, or just, you know, just in general?
I think it starts with arranging, I believe.
Yeah.
Getting into that, I feel like as well, it's as simple as you got to study, man. Like, you got to study different works, different bodies of works, like different producers, musical directors. And there's so many out there, big and small. You can just go on Instagram and just scroll. Like, you're going to see so many people that are like, and then just asking questions like, yo, what's your approach to this? And then from there, it's more so reach out to an artist. There's a lot of artists out there that just uses bands and they're just hired guns.
Yeah.
Right. But you got to be able to, like, the tip is like, just reach out to these people. Don't be afraid and build a relationship. I've seen people do it. From just being a drummer to building a relationship with the arts, now they're musical director, making certain calls, making certain decisions. So you just really gotta put yourself out there, be vulnerable a little bit. Yes, you're gonna get shut down. If you message 30 people, at least one person is gonna respond. And you just gotta be okay with not hearing back from 39 people and your ego doesn't get bruised.
Yeah.
Those are the main things.
Fantastic. What are you looking forward to over the next year?
Man,
just yourself.
Honestly, it's getting becoming a better leader.
Yeah.
Through experiences. And the only way I can do it, like I said, is through experiences. And then through those experiences, like more roles of musical directing, more roles of playing, even if being under great musical direction. In regards to another musical director, like not me always being the guy, but more more opportunities to grow in that realm, as well as like just playing, just continuing to play. Like I love playing. Yeah. I'm there now. I'm where I just like playing shows. Like, and that's my heart is there. But a lot of it is just being able to experience and learn like crazy. I just want to keep learning. Mm. And because I believe I have that mentality, that's going to open up. In order to learn, you need experience. So, like, I'm excited to be learning, to experience new things, new opportunities, working with different artists as well. Yeah. Working with, again, even continue to grow with Preston, building that show. Until I believe so heavily in who I work with and who I'm connected to. Like, again, people like yourself, building those type of relationships that are not just music based, but they're long lasting. Like down the road, I can bring my kids and be like, yeah, man, this man, great drummer, great person.
Yeah.
So it's just like building building relationships that are long lasting. I think I'm in that phase of my life right now.
Yeah. And what's the dream for you past the what you're looking forward to, which I appreciate? What's the dream?
Man, one of the dreams.
big question.
Yeah, man. I'm so grateful to be doing what about like being a full time musician.
Yeah,
with two kids, a beautiful wife. Like I'm so privileged, man. It's just, but my dream is honestly to do a, like, I think it's every musician's dream to do a world tour headline. I think. Yeah. Whether I'm playing, just playing, whether I'm musical directing, it'll be nice to musical direct that as well.
Yeah. But
I think that's one of my like main visions and dreams, to just be doing a world tour. And it'll be great to be doing that with somebody that I grew up with and not just like a random artist. I mean, I'm not gonna say no, but right. somebody like Preston that I grew up from the drum, Matthew, Kiara, like people that I worked with. People that took a chance on me when nobody else would, I'd love to go and be on a stage with them because it just means that much more for me and them.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Any like just because I'm thinking about it now, any like dream venues?
I have to do MSG.
Yeah, me too. Me too. MSG is the one for me as well. Yeah,
I have to do MSG. That's like, whenever I'm playing, usually I close my eyes and I think I'm in Madison Square Garden playing. Like, I don't know what is it about the Mecca.
I don't know. I don't know either.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. But I have to do MSG. That's like one of my goals in life. Like, I gotta play that arena.
Yeah. You mentioned it briefly. Let's move on to Sean, the father, husband, brother, friend.
Yeah.
I told you before I pressed record, we don't have many fathers or mothers or parents we don't have many just parents on the pod. And I just want to spend some time on this topic because I know it's very important to you and to us here at 8. And yeah, I just want to start off just how does your family like play into your role and your career kind of thing?
So my wife is probably the greatest wife in the world. I thought my mom was awesome, but I think my wife is like takes the cake. Like she, Leah. She's literally like the rock behind what I do. She's one of the reasons why I am where I am today. I'm one of the people that literally stood by me regardless of what was said about me, in regards to my skill set and all that stuff. She's the one that, yo, keep going. I believe that you could do it. You could do it. Don't worry. I got you. Like, go to these rehearsals, go to these things, go to these camps, do whatever you got to do. I got you. Like, and so my wife is my backbone. Like, that is just what it is. And everybody that knows me knows, like, Leah, how much Leah means to me in regards to just everything.
Yeah.
So my wife, Leah, she's amazing. Again, like, because it's not, I know, like, being a musician, I'll pause here for 1 second.
Yeah.
Being a musician and being in a relationship, if the spouse doesn't understand what you do, I've seen so many relationships go through the gutter.
Yep.
So many relationships die because the spouse doesn't fully understand how it works. I'm in regards to the late night rehearsals. Oh, is he cheating? Or is he doing this? Or is he out, is he out partying? Or is he out, is he working? Understanding me being out is me working. I'm not out here just doing whatever I'm doing. So me having a wife like Leah that fully understands the concept of, no, like, what he's doing is to better our lives as well. She gets that, and it makes it a lot easier, and you play better because in the back of your mind, you're not worrying about, the most important person to me is worrying about, is you're not worrying, you're not thinking that she's like, oh, what is she doing? What is she thinking?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's somebody in the back of your mind that's really in the back of your heart as well, that's really like pushing you forward. So whenever I feel like going to this 8-hour rehearsal, and I'm just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, Leah's the one like, yo, Sean, you got to go. Like, and having my things ready, my little snacks ready and stuff like,
sure,
man,
sure.
Like I don't deserve that type of woman, man. But being able to have somebody like that is like, that's what shapes me. And then my kids, like, even weird to say, like, even I say it's just weird to say, but like, that's the legacy, right?
So, yeah.
Whatever I do that to see if I can push them forward as well to be even greater than what I am. But my family, they shape who I am as a person.
Nice.
Without them, I don't know what the heck I'll be doing, to be honest.
How old are your kids now?
Ava is two nice. Going on 40. and Elijah, my newborn, he'll be 4 months in March.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, man.
Fantastic.
So it's tough, man. But like,
yeah.
Again, like somebody like myself touring, being a touring musician as well, you're away.
Yeah.
I remember a quick note is like when Leah was, we're coming to the due date of everything. And I had a show, like, I think we were like a week to the due date. And I had a show and Leah's like, all right. Like in the back of my mind, I went to go do this show. And every day I'm like on my phone, like, okay. Everything's okay. It's like those are the type of things that I had to go through in that last week. Nothing compared to what she had to go through.
Right.
But it's like it's really a sacrifice. But you're doing it for your family, so I love doing it, and she supports me, and they support me. It's
fantastic.
But it's always hard to leave them at home. Always.
Yeah. Any early musical signs from your daughter?
She loves to sing Baby Shark. She'd be singing Baby Shark all day, every day. She kills that. But for me, it's just like, whatever you want to do, do it. Like, if you want to be a singer, sing. I would love for you to be a singer. I'd love for you to be a musician. But if that's not what you want to do, it's
right.
I don't want to pressure them to be anything that they just don't want to be. Like, it's just, my parents didn't do that to me, so I'm not going to do that to
them. Right. You spoke on it a little bit. How do you talk about work-life balance with even approaching it like with yourself? Because I feel it sometimes too, you know, as somebody in a long-term relationship, in regards to, oh, you get a great opportunity, you know, and you're like, oh, well, can I do this? You know, do I even bring it up? Do I like just being very transparent, I guess. But like, how are you approaching the topic of work-life balance with yourself, but also with your family?
It's actually, it was harder before.
Yeah.
I think now it's just like, when you're home, try and be home. I'm still learning. Like I'm still learning that concept, but like when you're home, be home, like be
present.
Intentional about being present. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the main thing that you can do, because again, Matt, if whoever your favorite artist is right now, if they call you to go do this tour, man, if you told me that you're not going, I'm going to be really upset with you.
Yeah, sure.
I don't care what you're doing. I don't care what you're doing in your life. Matt, I need you to pick up those drumsticks, jump on that plane, and go and play some drums for this artist, right? Because it's not just about the money. It's also about the experience. It's about the whole picture. But then, again, chose this life. Like, people be like, this life chose me. No, it didn't. You can do whatever you want. We can quit tomorrow if we wanted to. We could be like, yo, I'm done with drums. Nobody call me, and that's it.
Yeah.
We chose what we're doing. So the main thing is like understanding what you're doing. Okay, so you know, sometimes you know your schedule way ahead of time.
Yes.
Put a day in your schedule saying, yo, this day is for my wife. So like Sundays. Sundays is for my family. I try my best to like be even more present. But I know, because I know Fridays, Saturdays, I'm either on a plane going somewhere, or I got to be at church. I work at my church as well. So you got to be intentional about the days you pick. One thing, that's an ongoing thing I'm learning. So I don't have it figured out. If you do, Matt, please send me a text.
Yeah.
I need help on that too, because I'm so passionate about music. I'm so passionate about production.
Yeah.
I'm so passionate about just being on stage that sometimes I forget everything that's going on around me. And I'm just like, my mind's like, I got to get this done. I got to get this finished.
Yes.
But it's again, like when I'm home, I'm trying my best, even now within the last week or two, I'm trying my best to be even more present when I'm home, understanding like, okay. Yeah. So yeah, you've been gone for 6-7 hours. Okay. For the next 2 hours, try and be present. Have a conversation with your wife, like have a conversation with your girl or whoever your spouse is.
Yeah.
Just be present as much as you can, so that they know when you're gone, when you come back, you're actually missed. And it's like you're missed in a good way, where I miss the presence and your talks. It's not just like I miss you folding laundry or I miss you helping around with the kids. Like, you know what I mean?
I literally
miss you being around.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's kind of what I'm working on now.
How have you approached this topic with management in regards to work-life balance, you know?
Management.
Like in regards to, let's say it might not necessarily be a work-life thing, but it might also be like, okay, when your daughter turns 3, to not book you on that day or whatever. You know, or whatever,
so,
like just approaching the topic with not necessarily only management, but just like the people that you're working for as well.
Honestly, Matt, I think the number one thing is, and I had to learn this, is you just have to be honest. People will understand, and it's obviously easier said than done. Like being honest is not hard, but it's, you don't want to disappoint people. So sometimes you try and shape some things to make sure that you can be available. But I think people will know what you value.
Yes.
So I work with Coalition, Matt and Cole.
Yeah.
They know my values. I value family. I value those things. So when it's a case where it's just like, yo, Matt or Cole, I need a flight. I need a red eye flight because I got to be back home for this time. It's not a, whatever. Because
right.
It's a, okay, Sean, we're going to do our best to see what you do. And mostly they accommodate that request because they understand my value. And it's, so my thing is like, what do you value versus what you don't value? I'm able to, with them, just be honest from the get-go that, hey, I value my family.
Yeah.
I value these things. I need to be here for this time. And again, like if it's important to you, sometimes you'll bring it around.
Of course.
I carry what's important to you. I carry my family with me.
Yeah.
Either in person or just in spirit, in my talks and how I talk about my kids and how I talk about my wife. Like I carry those things with me. So now it's just like they understand the game. Like, okay, if Sean said he needs to be home, Sean needs to be home. If Sean says he can't do this, he can't do this.
Right.
But Sean will also talk for us.
Yes.
Sean will also do what he needs, make sure things are in order so that we're okay as well. And if you could get the both sides of the coin right, because a lot of it is like you care so much about one thing, but something falls short.
Yes, yeah.
It can't be that.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to Preston, the music, rehearsals, the show has to be right, which makes sure that this side is okay. So now my family always comes first, period. But because they understand that I'm doing my best at this, doing the next thing, the family thing, it's like, Sean, do what you got to do. Because we know it right now or not, the music side is going to be covered. We're not worried about that.
Right.
So go do what you got to do. But you got to be straight. You got to be honest. And you got to be like upfront, not last minute. Like if Ava's birthday is on that day or whatever. I've missed baby showers. Been there for like 2 hours and then got to run to go do a wedding. But again, it's value too. What's the goals for your household?
Yeah.
My goal is to be able to have my own house. There's certain things you're going to miss because you got to sacrifice. It's a sacrifice,
yeah.
Right? I'm going to have to sacrifice some time, some family time to be working. My parents did it. My dad wasn't home all the time because he had to work late hours in order to take care of his three boys at home and his wife. He had to do it. So it's the same thing for me.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the 57th episode of the Cloud Machine Podcast. I'm here with Sean Sams. We're having a great conversation.
Hey,
we want
yo?
To... What's up? Wanted to conclude the episode with a little producer's game. For those of you who listen to the podcast regularly, you might know this game. If you don't, that's fine. I basically ask my guests, and this week it's Sean, about their dream album, as in who the artist would be, who would be on the production team, who would be in the band, the studio, the city, as in you could bring Abbey Road to New York, or anything, any of those sort of combinations. You could bring, I don't know, you know, Sunset Sound from LA to Toronto, whatever you want. The era, as in it could be right now, it could be in the 80s, it could be in the 1700s, whatever you want. And then for Sean, I've added this week a little extra. It's... what would he do for the live show? So, Sean, what you got for us on the producer's game? You can go in any order you'd like.
So, all right. So let's start with the city.
Okay.
City, New York.
Fantastic.
I don't know why I like New York.
Yeah. MSG.
Studio. MSG, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to flip mine a little bit if I can. I want this to be a live album.
Okay, fantastic.
So I want it to be at the MSG.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Great. So it's live at the MSG.
Great.
The band. Ooh, the band on drums. Oh my gosh. Nick Smith.
Great.
On drums, Nick Smith. On bass, Kemi Ciala.
Oh my gosh.
That's my guy. Yo, that's one of my closest friends out here.
Young cat. Yo, for those who don't know for those who don't know Kemi, you gotta know Kemi. He's a beast.
On keys, I have to do my brother Kurt Grange.
Okay.
I don't know. That's my guy.
Yeah.
You guys will hear about him eventually.
Yeah.
So I got drums, bass, keys on aux. Ooh. Oh my gosh. There's so many people. There's so many people on aux. Ugh. I'll put Aaron. This guy named his producer named Aaron.
Okay.
He's a gospel guy.
Okay, great.
And then I'll just leave that there. Those four.
Okay.
On guitar, TJ Whitelaw.
Crazy.
TJ Whitelaw.
Yeah.
And my dude Zach. I love Zach.
Yeah.
Zach plays guitar for Preston. The artist. Dead or alive?
Dead or alive.
I'm gonna go with MJ.
There you go.
I want a gospel MJ record.
Crazy.
And then producer, I'm going to put myself up there.
Perfect.
I'm going to put myself up there to be one of the producers. And
Any other producers?
Any other producers? I would put... I like Aaron.
Yeah.
On there. I like Pharrell on there.
There you go.
I like even I know Adam Blackstone does a lot more of the live musical directing, but I like Adam Blackstone.
Heavy.
And Kyrie Tyler. Amazing. Tyler, he musical directs for Beyonce right now.
Yes. Crazy.
He would be on there too. Again, like the band is so like
You kept it pretty Toronto with the band.
Pretty Toronto, I love that. I love my people, man. I love them.
Amazing. And what would the live show sort of look like?
I want a mixture of Michael Jackson original.
Yeah.
With a hint of gospel showy.
Yeah.
In regards to like what he does. But I love also the rock that Michael Jackson had as well, like the rockish. That's why I got TJ and Zat, because I know they can bring that vibe. And it's gonna be a lot of movement, a lot of dancing, a lot of showmanship, a lot of video wall work.
There you go. That bad record, Michael Jackson's bad record.
There you go. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of that stuff.
Yes.
And it's just like with a mixture of Justin Timberlake vibe.
There you go. With the Blackstone.
With the Blackstone. That's how the Blackstone's in there.
Yeah.
Man, and then like the simplicity of Kyrie Tyler and the Beyonce record, on the Beyonce tour. The simplicity and the fullness of sound.
Yeah,
man, you just gave me an idea. So, I'm gonna take that to Ableton right now and try something.
There you go. Cool, man. Well, that's how we conclude the podcast, man. Thank you for accepting the invitation. So insightful to talk to. We don't know that much about. We haven't hung out that much. But it was so good to chat and to hear you on, you know, your life and your career and your family. Not and so all bad. That stuff and even your process. I love that. So folks, make sure to check out his socials, follow him, do whatever you connect, reach out. It's at Sean Sams on IG, just to stay in the know, as well. Also want to thank those who are currently listening and have been listening to the Cloud Machine podcast. We're at episode 57. That's 57 weeks.
Wow.
So we are out here having some chats and just connecting with some people and sharing these conversations, because we think it's so important. You know, I'm going to do it. Like, comment, subscribe, do whatever you got to do to share it along. You know, our main goal is to share information about the music industry that we believe is so gatekept. So please don't hesitate to share with your friends, subscribe, do whatever you got to do. Thanks, Sean. Any last words of wisdom here?
Man, I'll just say, yo, you guys just don't stop what you're doing. Many people will say whatever they want to say. People like what they like. They don't like what they don't like. Don't stop what you're doing. Keep at it. Stay focused. Big shout out to Matt, Nate, the whole entire crew. These guys are doing something powerful. You guys will see these guys on a bigger scale. I promise you, these guys are doing something fantastic. And they know they got my support 100% through.
Man.
Whatever they need, Sean is there.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for your words. And thanks for your support always. And, you know, one day, MSG, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Let's do it, man. Let's
All right, do people. It. Thank you for listening. As always, stay safe and see you next week. Bye.